If you love Snapped, you're going to love listening to true crime or mystery titles on Audible. The latest mind-bending title I'm obsessed with is How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kirsten Perrin. A fortune teller predicts a young Frances Adams will be murdered, leading her into a paranoid frenzy, trying to solve her own murder before it even happens. Nearly 60 years later, Frances is killed, and it becomes her great-niece's mission to solve the case. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has you covered for every genre you're looking for in audio entertainment. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. It is the home of storytelling, after all. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500. That's audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When a divorced mother and a single father wade back into the dating pool, there's no mistaking what they're after.
Come out of something like that a little bit burned, so now it's time to have a good
time. But when another woman enters the picture, what starts as petty jealousy grows into something much more
malevolent. She's crying, she's mad, she's very upset. She obviously knew that I had a woman there. The texting and the emails and the phone calls just got worse and worse and worse.
She had been using different technology to try to hide her true location.
She drafted thousands of texts, thousands of emails.
Eventually, the threats moved from the digital realm to the real world in the most deadly way imaginable.
She calls me, my house is on fire.
It was apparent that not only had the leg probably been dismembered, but that the leg had been charred.
As the investigation into the crime deepens, the question becomes, who's really behind it?
My paranoia level was through the frickin' roof. This person you think you know for all this time is not at all the person you think you know, not even remotely.
December 5th, 2015, Council Bluffs, Iowa. At 6:30 p.m., dispatchers in this quiet Omaha suburb receive a harrowing call.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
I've been shot in the leg.
The caller is 40-year-old Liz Gollier.
Liz reported being shot in a lake north of Council Bluffs in a park.
I'm not in the park, ma'am.
I'm in one of the parking lots on the left-hand side. I have a little red Toyota, and I'm laying next to it.
According to Liz, she was walking on a trail when the attack occurred.
Okay. Is the assailant still nearby?
I don't think so. I took off running.
Okay.
As first responders race to the scene, the dispatcher tries to gather as much information from Liz as she can.
How many people were there?
Oh, I don't know. I only heard one.
Do you know if it was male or female?
A female.
Is there more than one wound?
I think it was one. They shot off a couple of shots. They only hit more than one, I think. Oh, my pant leg is filled with blood. Oh, Jesus.
By the time emergency responders arrive, Liz is losing consciousness. As Liz is rushed to the hospital, sheriff's officers secure the park and begin the search for the shooter.
Omaha police helicopter makes it up there and kind of scans the area.
This shooting is just the latest in a long line of bizarre and deadly events that started more than 3 years earlier. Liz Gollier was born in Michigan in 1975. Practically from the moment she was born, life dealt Liz a tough hand.
When she was a baby, her father died. But then shortly after that, her mother, I believe, was walking somewhere up in Michigan where she's from, and a car went off the road and struck her and killed her. And there was no other family to take her in, so she went to the foster system.
After years in the foster system, Liz was adopted. The family provided Liz with love and support. But after graduating high school, Liz decided to strike out on her own, eventually settling in Omaha, Nebraska. By the time she was 37, Liz had given birth to two children and was rebounding from a failed relationship. After a few months on her own, she tried online dating and came across the profile of 35-year-old Dave Krupa. Like Liz, Dave had recently ended a decade-long relationship.
He was in a very long relationship with a lady named Amy Flora.
Amy and Dave, they went out for, I think, almost a dozen years, and they had two children together.
We did the family thing, had the house and everything but the white picket fence, but we never went down to the courthouse and did a wedding.
But Dave and Amy eventually discovered their romance was not meant to last.
We split the 4th of July, must have been 2011.
Amy is originally from Council Bluffs, so after breaking up with Dave, she wants to go back to Council Bluffs to be closer to the family. Being a good father, he followed.
I moved them, her and the kids, down here, and then another month and a half, 2 months after that, I came down here. I didn't know anybody.
It was after landing a job at a local repair shop that Dave took a stab at online dating. The first person to send him a message was Liz Gollier.
We were kind of on the same page, nothing serious. Let's have a good time, you know, just some companionship. So that's, you know, where we started. And we hit it off. We're actually hanging out at each other's houses, you know, going to dinner, going out on the town, that sort of thing. She was pretty sexy. It was a lot of fun. She was very lively, you know, expressive. And always wanted to have a good time.
However, by the fall, Dave and Liz's fling seemed to have run its course.
Liz and myself hadn't been seeing a lot of each other at that time. We were a little more apart.
Liz was talking to a guy in Council Bluffs, and she had made plans to meet up with another guy.
As he and Liz grew apart, another single mom caught Dave's eye when she came into his shop, 38-year-old Carrie Farver. Born and raised in Macedonia, Iowa, Carrie had a computer science degree and, by all accounts, was flat-out brilliant.
She was an undocumented genius, like an IQ of like 160 or 155.
Though Carrie was very intelligent, she was hardly a straight-laced computer geek.
She wanted to live life and have fun. She was not afraid to do shots and drink beer and have a lot of laughs.
But the real joy in Carrie's life was Max, her 14-year-old son from a prior relationship.
I believe her son was her life, you know. That's what she worked hard for. That was her priority.
Carrie was a great mom. She never missed any of her son's football games or any band concerts.
Between her son, her job, and hanging out with her friends, Carrie didn't really have the time or the desire to get into another serious relationship.
She had pretty high standards herself, you know, as far as like who she would keep in her life and certainly who she would keep around Max. She was very protective of Max.
Then in October 2012, when Carrie laid eyes on Dave Krupa, their connection was instant.
She was very pretty. She was also very confident. And, you know, I guess I ventured a little bit and we got a date. We hit it off.
Like Liz Gollier before her, Carrie made it clear she wasn't looking for a serious relationship.
We had talked to each other face to face about not being that involved. She made it very clear up front that she was not there for that.
Dating multiple people at times and playing the field, as they call it, she thought it was entertainment, you know, didn't make any apologies.
It was exciting. Like I said, she was super smart. She was smarter than me, that's for sure. She had opinions and wasn't afraid to share them, which was nice. And she certainly wasn't bad to look at. She stayed over quite a bit.
Dave and Carrie seem to have forged the perfect, no-strings-attached relationship. So much so that Carrie seemed unfazed that Dave and his other recent girlfriend, Liz Gollier, remained friends, even after the romance fizzled out. That is, until Carrie and Liz ran into each other at Dave's apartment one November afternoon.
Liz stops at Dave's apartment to get some of her belongings, and that's when Carrie is there in Dave's apartment. That's when they cross paths. Liz claimed that Carrie called her a bitch.
Shortly after this alleged run-in, the normally freewheeling Carrie began exhibiting some bizarre behavior.
I said, bye, have a nice day, gave her a kiss on the way out the door. Around 9:45, 10 o'clock, I got a text, something along the lines of, hey, we should move in together. I was extremely left field. We had already talked about these sorts of things, and neither one of us was interested in a serious relationship. So I just texted her back and said, you know, probably not. Almost as fast as I could put my phone back in my pocket, I get a text back. Fine, I found somebody else. F you, go away. I don't want you anyway. You're a piece of crap. On and on and on and on.
Carrie's abrupt change of character leaves Dave stumped. But is this just the beginning of the fury? Coming up, will this once innocent fling become a full-blown fatal attraction?
My phone was literally unusable. It would just vibrate all day long.
They kind of believe that someone that's bipolar would do something like this.
How far will the harassment go before someone really gets hurt?
It had become even more real than heat-up cars and smashed windows.
So she gets to shoot somebody, and then she gets to kill another person, and you guys aren't arresting her.
In November of 2012, Dave Krupa's fledgling romance with Carrie Farver has taken a turn for the worse after a heated exchange between Carrie and Dave's ex-girlfriend, Liz Gollier.
When they crossed paths at Dave's apartment, Liz claimed that Carrie called her a bitch.
Soon after, Dave reminded Carrie that theirs was meant to be a casual affair, nothing too serious. That's when he began receiving a series of harassing text messages.
Carrie was texting me again, just generally being rude. You know, I hate you, you're worthless, go away, don't talk to me.
Dave assumed that if he simply ignored the messages, Carrie would eventually stop harassing him. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Just one after another, after another, after another, after another. Probably had over 1,000 in a day or more.
And the things she would email would just be vulgar, call people horrible names.
A bunch of expletives, cussing. He had, since they had broken up, received emails or messages from Carrie, and it would be like a pictures of Dave's window saying, I'm watching you.
Carrie's seemingly unhinged comments weren't solely directed at Dave. She also told him how she felt about his ex, Liz Gollier, as well.
They were calling Liz names, nasty names, crazy whore, that kind of thing.
It was a firestorm of jealousy that just bled out of all these communications.
She'd be ranting about Liz, trying to say, Liz took me away from Carrie, and then she'd flip around and say, yeah, you're a piece of shit too, and Liz is a piece of shit, and I hope you die, and blah, blah, blah.
The harassment got so bad that Dave considered going to the police, But on November 21st, 2012, the police come to him about Carrie instead.
I was in the back of the shop. My guy was running the front counter, come back and said, hey, the sheriffs are here for you. He's talking about a missing persons report, and I'm showing him my phone with all these crazy texts on it going, I'd like to file a report too, you know, make her go away, go find her and tell her to leave me alone.
According to the sheriff's officer, Carrie's seemingly unbalanced behavior had recently bled into other areas of her personal life.
There were initial texts from Carrie's phone to her own mother.
She received a message that Carrie was going to Kansas for a new job. I'm leaving and leaving my son, and good luck, you can raise him. She had never seen that type of behavior from Carrie, and that's what alarmed her so much.
She was not one to just abandon her son.
That's not Carrie. Max meant everything to her. There would have been no question that something's up.
Investigators ask Dave if Carrie had exhibited any erratic behavior prior to the spate of menacing text messages. Dave says no, but it's clear to investigators he's rattled by this whole ordeal.
I believe, as Dave explained it, is he felt relief, like he had dodged a bullet there with maybe getting involved with someone that maybe has some mental issues.
You know, if it's going to be this way, I'm glad it only lasted 14 days. I don't want to find that out 6 months down the road.
Investigators ask Dave to let them know if he receives any additional messages from Carrie.
He seemed very honest, transparent, more than willing to help. I mean, just whatever he could do to help, it was going to be a burden off of his shoulders if all this could be resolved.
This seems to have gone from a case of harassment to one of child abandonment and a possible missing person.
It just piled on to the overwhelming feeling of where do we go? What do we do next?
In an effort to locate Carrie and to better understand the motive behind her actions, investigators reach out to Carrie's mother. They ask her if Carrie had any history of mental illness, and she informs them that Carrie has suffered from bipolar disorder.
She would go through depressive periods over the years, and you just wouldn't hear from her for a while.
Nancy's admission gives investigators pause.
They kind of believed that Carrie had gone off of her medication, was having some mental health issues. They would kind of believe that someone that's bipolar would do something like this.
It's a theory that's only reinforced the following morning, when Carrie's mother informs investigators that she's received another message from her daughter.
She received a message from Carrie with a picture of a check attached to the message saying, I sold my furniture.
And the text messages said, hey, this is for my furniture. Let this person into my house to retrieve the furniture. And the check was signed by Shanna Goyer.
Shanna goes by Liz as well. Liz used to date Dave Krupa.
That afternoon, investigators head to Liz Gollier's apartment. Liz explains that not only did she not purchase Carrie's furniture, she was worried that Carrie would try to hurt her or her children.
She was sending pictures of Liz's kids, taken from outside the house, saying, I'm watching you, I can see you, you better watch your back.
However, if Carrie was hoping to drive a wedge between Dave and his former flame, she was having the opposite effect.
Liz, she was able to commiserate with Dave because Dave was being harassed at the same time by the same person. And it certainly drew the two of them closer together.
We had this common foe, this common enemy, this common problem. You know, we could talk about it to each other because we're both going through it.
Even though they're broken up, he comes running and he comes to her aid and they get back together.
We could be on the couch watching TV or a movie and had been sitting there for an hour or more, not on our phones, not doing anything, and all of a sudden I'd get an email or a text, and she did an email or a text from Carrie. The texting and the emails and the phone calls just got worse and worse and worse.
In order to stop Carrie, investigators have to find her. So they turn to the internet to see if Carrie's social media profiles offer any hints to her whereabouts.
We found a new social media profile, a Facebook profile, several dating profiles on different sites, numerous different what appeared to be cell phone numbers. It was just a constant something new pop up here, something new pop up here.
Detectives hope one of these profiles will reveal Carrie's location. Coming up, the harassment goes from texting to something much more dangerous.
She calls me, my house is on fire. Is that crazy, Carrie?
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Detectives in the Omaha suburb of Council Bluffs, Iowa, are investigating the disappearance of Carrie Farver, who, in a matter of days, seems to have quit her job, abandoned her child to the care of her mother, and sent a series of harassing digital messages to her former boyfriend, Dave Krupa.
Dave Krupa was living under the assumption that he was being stalked by Carrie.
Something along the lines of 12,500 emails.
But Dave isn't the only target of Carrie's digital assault. Dave's ex, Liz Gollier, also reported getting similar emails.
Carrie has been harassing Liz, sending all these text messages and so forth. Every time she would get a harassing email from Carrie, she'd forward that along to Dave.
For the next few days, investigators monitor Carrie's various profiles, but there's no activity that would reveal her current location. Then, on January 10th, 2013, Dave Krupa pulls into the parking lot of his apartment complex and is greeted by an unwelcome surprise.
He saw a car parked. It was literally, 50 feet probably from his front door to his apartment.
And as soon as my attention was drawn to it, I went, "That's her truck. That's her Explorer." I called the sheriffs immediately, said, "It's here, come and get it."
Sheriff's deputies impound Carrie's vehicle and deliver it to CSIs for forensic processing. But again, it seems Carrie has successfully covered her tracks.
They said that thing was in pristine condition. It had been cleaned. It was obvious to them.
As routine procedure in a missing person case, CSIs process the vehicle for prints. Thankfully, they're able to recover one potential clue.
They are able to lift a print off of a mint container that's left in the console area in the front.
The print was ran through APHIS, nationwide, see if we get lucky and it hits on something, and we got zero hits. There was no match.
The print was not even a match for Carrie. With nothing to indicate where she is or what she'll do next, investigators are at a loss. Over the next several months, Carrie's harassment of Dave Krupa and Liz Gollier escalates.
Liz would make constant police reports saying that she was being stalked by Carrie, that her cars were being vandalized, her house was being burglarized. In all those reports, she identified Carrie as the person who had committed these crimes.
Then, in the early morning hours of August 17th, 2013, the situation takes a potentially deadly turn.
Dave had received an email about 12:30 a.m. It seems to be Carrie saying, "I'm burning Liz's house down right now. I hope her and her kids are here so they all die."
Moments later, Dave receives a panicked call from Liz.
She calls me, "My house is on fire. It's that crazy Carrie." I'm like, "Oh my God." I get in my car and drive over there. All I saw was a bunch of fire trucks. The house was total.
It was clearly an arson because there was accelerants. Gas from within the house was used, poured on clothes and a couch in the basement.
Fortunately, Liz's children weren't home at the time of the fire, but there are several victims.
Liz's pets, a snake, a dog, a couple cats, all died in the fire due to smoke inhalation.
Guy helped her clean up some stuff and drag it out of the house, but she wouldn't tell me where she's going. "I don't want your crazy stalker to follow me." Totally understandable. I get it. I don't blame you one bit.
From that point on, Carrie's harassment slowly dissipates.
There were periods where I would only get 2 or 3 emails a day. That was kind of always there. But at some point, it dropped off pretty dramatically.
Though the harassment seems to have stopped, the fact remains, no one has seen Carrie Farver in more than 10 months, a fact that deeply troubles Carrie's friends and family, especially her son.
She had missed significant events in her life that she would not have missed.
Her birthday would come and go, and Max did awesome in football and then graduated. She talked about that when he was 4. And there's nobody that would have been more proud, and nobody had any answers.
When detectives show Carrie's family the string of emails and texts Carrie allegedly sent to both Dave Krupa and Liz Gollier, Carrie's family has doubts about their authenticity.
Carrie's mom said, "This is not the way my daughter speaks. She doesn't misspell words. She didn't have this sort of tone that was in the messages."
The harassing messages continue to flare up periodically for more than 2 years. Finally, on December 4th, 2015, there's an unexpected development. Liz Gollier walks into the Pottawatomie Sheriff's Office looking to file a complaint.
"He said that you were trying to file harassment?"
"Yeah, a harassment, stalking. She keeps stalking me on Facebook."
Has Carrie finally returned? Or is this complicated case about to take another unexpected twist?
She starts telling us about how this lady named Amy is harassing her. Amy, we find out, is mother of Dave's children.
According to Liz, it all started a few weeks earlier when she began receiving emails and Facebook messages from Amy. But it wasn't just the threatening tone of the messages that unnerved Liz. It was their eerie similarity to the messages she used to receive from Carrie.
The grammar was really bad in all the same ways, and it was the same repetition over and over and over. You could tell it was the same person.
Could it be the same person behind both Amy and Carrie's harassing emails and texts? Liz seems to think so.
"They only dated for 2 weeks, and I don't understand why a person would still be stalking him almost 3 years later. I would find it more reasonable to believe that his kid's mom is him."
If Amy Flora is responsible for all the harassing messages, is it possible she's also responsible for Carrie Farver's disappearance? Investigators ask Liz to forward them her recent exchanges with Amy Flora. Liz agrees. But less than 24 hours later, the case takes yet another unbelievable turn.
"911, what's the address of your emergency?"
"Oh yeah, I've been shot in the leg."
The day after she came into our office to make that harassment report with Avis, that next day, Liz is shot.
Coming up, in the wake of the shooting, Liz fights for her life. and an already bizarre case takes another chilling turn.
It appeared that she was targeting yet another female.
For 3 long years, a person alleging to be Carrie Farver has made life a living hell for her one-time lover, Dave Krupa, and the ex-girlfriend he is still close with, Liz Gollier. Now, Liz has come forward with information that suggests the real stalker might be Amy Flora, Dave's former common-law wife and the mother of his children.
Maybe Amy's the one obsessed with Dave and is just trying to take out all these lovers of Dave's.
Before investigators can track down Amy, tragedy strikes again.
That next day, Liz is shot.
As officers secure the scene, Liz is rushed into surgery.
Liz's wound that she had on the thigh, 2 doctors examined it, and both had different opinions of what was the entrance and what was the exit.
After hours of surgery, doctors managed to staunch the bleeding and stabilize Liz. 2 days later, investigators pay her a visit at the hospital.
All of a sudden, somebody walked up behind me and stuck a gun to my back and told me to get on the ground. And I thought I was dead.
She said something to the effect of, "How do you like f***ing Dave?" And then shot her in the thigh and ran.
It's Amy shot you with this knife.
Pretty much, that's what I'm thinking.
The police responded immediately to Amy Flora's residence. There they located her with an infant son and another toddler age child. Police questioned her. She stated she had no idea what they're talking about.
Amy claims she's been at home the entire day and was nowhere near the park at the time of the shooting.
A neighbor there also corroborated her story, saying that her vehicle had never left the parking lot of her residence. It didn't appear that she had committed this crime in any manner.
But if Amy hadn't shot Liz Gollier, then who had? Was Carrie Farver behind this spree of terror after all? Deputies hope the answer lies in the recent spate of threatening emails and texts Liz allegedly received from Amy Flora.
Is there any possible way we could track, you know, keep going with what you have from those emails that we could still find any trace?
There was a YouTube video posted under the name Carrie Farver.
It's just a video of somebody using a cell phone camera going through Dave's apartment complex.
They had been using different technology to try to hide their true location, but in this instance, they used their real IP address.
The source of the video comes as a shock to investigators.
And that real IP address, it could be traced back to Council Bluffs, Iowa. That real IP address could be traced back to where Liz lived. It turned out to be dozens and dozens of accounts that were impersonating Carrie. Just one by one, each one of them found its way back to Liz.
The breadth and extent of Liz's impersonation of Carrie is breathtaking. If you consider it, she drafted thousands of texts, thousands of emails, all purportedly from Carrie. She would use apps that would disguise her email address.
But if Liz Gollier had been sending these messages to herself, who was responsible for shooting her or for setting her house on fire?
Dave Krupa at some point realized that his firearm had been stolen from his apartment. Shortly thereafter, Liz said she was in fear of her life from Amy. When law enforcement appeared to not take her claim seriously, all of a sudden, Liz sustained a gunshot wound at a park. Amy Flora did not shoot Liz. Liz shot Liz. It's unbelievable that someone would set a fire in their own house knowing that their pets are going to die. This is how dedicated Liz was to the scheme.
However, the new evidence raises an even more disturbing question. If Liz had been posing as Carrie Farver for all these years, then where is Carrie now? On December 14th, 2015, investigators invite Liz Gollier in for an interview. under the guise that they want to ask her a few more questions about Amy Flora.
We were going to tell her that we found remains. The remains hadn't been identified yet, but we believe that they might be Carrie's. If Amy's bold enough to shoot you, then she probably killed Carrie. And we know that Amy's communicating with you.
I didn't know if maybe you felt comfortable seeing if you could kind of push her for some more info on the Carrie thing. Because if she was, you know, come out with some details of exactly what she did to Carrie and so forth like that, that would help our case immensely.
Well, I'll try like maybe one or two emails.
And sure enough, boom, she goes home. She sent these emails into the police then saying, I've got these emails that Amy sent me confessing.
The emails also paint a detailed, albeit brutal, picture of how Carrie Farver died.
She came over after Dave left for work. She caught her at the house and got her into Carrie's own vehicle.
She stabbed Carrie in the stomach and the chest area multiple times. This happened in Carrie's vehicle. The body was burned afterwards, disposed of in a dumpster somewhere. She had cleaned the vehicle and returned it back to Dave's apartment complex area. We get these confessional emails, and it's telling us that this happened in this vehicle. So we decide we need to go back to this vehicle. We found the vehicle again. It'd been through a couple owners. I pull out the driver's seat, pull off the fabric off the driver's seat, nothing. I pull out the passenger seat, pull off the fabric off that. There's a dark red stain on the seat. We got the results that it was positive for Carrie's DNA. It was a lot of validation. It felt like, hey, we're there. We did it. We've proven this isn't a missing persons case, that this is a homicide.
With Liz now in their crosshairs, investigators need to know if the fingerprint that was found in their initial search of Carrie's car could be a match to Liz.
Doty requested our crime tech to compare that print directly to Liz's fingerprint because it was on file from a Michigan arrest. And upon comparing those prints, it was a match. That fingerprint from the car was Liz Gollier's fingerprint.
Even with this new evidence, the case against Liz remains circumstantial, and investigators are hesitant to issue a warrant for her arrest.
We didn't have a body. Not a lot of no-body homicide cases are tried, because a lot of prosecutors won't take them.
However, given Liz Gollier's newfound fixation on Dave Krupa's ex, Amy Flora, detectives fear history may repeat itself.
Anybody who's willing to shoot themselves is pretty off the charts, not stable. I'm convinced that she was about to do something very sinister to Amy as well.
In late January of 2016, investigators reach out to Dave Krupa, letting him know that he, his children, and his ex, Amy Flora, could be in grave danger.
Doty came to me at work that day and told me that we know Liz did it. We believe that Liz murdered Carrie. We believe that she is targeting Amy. I was shocked on many levels. They said, this is serious, this is real, you need to go take care of your kids.
While investigators work to build their case against Liz Gollier, Dave Krupa moves back in with Amy Flora and their children.
They get a call from Liz. She was very emotional. She was crying on the phone. She was very upset.
So she gets to shoot somebody, and then she gets to kill another person, and then she gets to move in with Dave, and she gets to be free, and you guys aren't arresting her.
Investigators invite Liz to the station to talk. When she arrives, they turn the tables on her.
Why would you create all these emails?
I haven't created any emails.
They're coming from you.
No, they're not.
The finger's pointing right at you.
I'm done talking, and I'm going to have my attorney, because I didn't do anything.
We knew she was following and stalking Amy. We knew that she was driving by her home, and we were scared for Amy's life, really, honestly. And they were like, we need to do something.
I've got enough probable cause to make an arrest, and I feel we have plenty of evidence pointing the finger at her. Even as circumstantial as most of it was, it was still too much to overcome, in my opinion.
With enough evidence behind them, police arrest Liz Gollier.
It was a huge weight off my shoulder. It felt good not to have to look over my shoulder anymore and not to have to worry about my kids anymore.
Coming up, without Carrie's remains, the case against Liz is far from a slam dunk.
There wasn't a body and there wasn't a found weapon, and a lot of this stuff was circumstantial.
But then, prosecutors make an 11th hour discovery that could tip the scales of justice in their favor.
This was the closest thing we had to a smoking gun.
Spring 2017. 42-year-old Liz Gollier is awaiting trial for the murder of 37-year-old Carrie Farver. Prosecutors believe that after murdering Carrie, Liz assumed Carrie's online persona and pretended to stalk herself and her ex-boyfriend, Dave Krupa, in order to cover up her crime.
All of these reports, the destruction of property, harassment, stalking, vandalism, even the arson at Liz's house, they all actually correlate with Dave and Liz's relationship. If they hit a low point in their relationship, about that same time, a report would be filed.
This whole thing that was going on, that was crazy. I mean, that's Lex Luthor stuff.
But as the trial approaches, prosecutors still have major holes in their case. Holes that Liz's defense attorneys are prepared to exploit.
There was no body. There was no eyewitnesses. There was no murder weapon.
That was going to be a huge obstacle.
Seemingly on a whim, Detective Avis and Kava are out running around, stop by the shop. And Kava says, hey, by the way, you know, we've looked at the computer, we've looked at the phones and everything. Is there anything else you got laying around? And I said, oh, you know what? There was an old tablet.
What was interesting was the SD card that was in it. It had been formatted years before, and it looked like it was empty, but things that are deleted aren't necessarily deleted forever.
The images from that SD card made it apparent that this SD card belonged to Liz Gollier. Lots of selfies and just pictures that were consistent with things in her home.
However, there's one photo that stops investigators dead in their tracks.
I thought we might be looking at, a tattoo on a person. It looked like a foot to me. It looked like a human foot.
It was probably from the knee down. It was apparent that not only had the leg probably been dismembered, but that the leg had been charred.
Could the leg belong to the victim, Carrie Farver?
They reached out to Nancy Rainey, who is Carrie's mom, and just verified, you know, what tattoos did she have, and Carrie had a tattoo on her foot. It was a Chinese symbol, and I believed it meant mother.
When the photograph was located, the tattoo, it was essentially our body that we were missing.
This was the closest thing we had to a smoking gun.
That gutted our defense, because now before, where there was no body, no cause of death, all of a sudden now, they could say Liz did it.
In May 2017, Liz Gollier's trial gets underway. Having waived her right to a jury trial, Liz's fate hangs in the hands of a single judge. But the defense attorney believes there's still a chance for Liz's freedom.
The defense really wanted to sell that the police had not been able to provide a body, a murder weapon, or anything else that would definitively say that Liz was responsible for this.
Unfortunately for Liz, this defense backfires.
Liz was convicted of first-degree murder. So that's an automatic life sentence here in Nebraska without a chance for parole.
She's stone cold. I mean, just no reaction at all. She didn't cry. She sat there.
To hear the judge say guilty and the way he said it and talked about how he couldn't understand how a human could be capable of these kind of things was just great redemption, I think, for a lot of the people in there to hear that the judge saw it the same way all of us did.
It took everything in me to just not jump up out of the seat and act ridiculous and just stay professional.
The verdict especially made an impact on the lives of Carrie's family, particularly her mother, Nancy, and son, Max.
I'm so happy for Nancy and Max, not because of the loss, but because of the answer. And this is not even about vengeance. It's more about having closure, resolution.
Now that Carrie Farver's friends and loved ones know the truth, they're determined to remember the woman they knew and loved, not the one Liz Gollier so unjustly made her out to be.
Liz tried to make Carrie uneducated, not employed, not a good mother. Carrie was opposite of what Liz tried to make her be.
I think Liz's reason for doing all this is she was just obsessed with Dave. She would try to take out anybody that got in her way to be with Dave.
I think ultimately Liz snapped when she encountered Carrie at the apartment. To Liz, that was a paramount moment for her and her relationship with Dave. I think Carrie became Liz's obsession, and it consumed her to the point of murder.
Carrie should be remembered as a beautiful, fun, full of life woman. You know, wanted to experience things, wanted to be out there, and she was a good woman.
Hi, Snapped fans. This is John Thrasher, co-host of Oxygen's other true crime podcast, Martinis and Murder. I'm jumping in here because there's additional information about this case that you didn't hear in the episode. Tragically, Carrie Farver's body has never been found. Also, as for Liz Gollier, she's currently being housed at the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women. For more true crime stories and updates, be sure to subscribe to my show, Martinis and Murder, with new episodes dropping every Thursday and Sunday wherever you listen to.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Podcasts.